I just finished like a little toy app that I wanted to share, but I'm having trouble like uploading the video. That's kind of what I want to talk about right off the bat. Maybe
Is
that
it
kind of,
still uploading, or do you want me to like post anything?
I sent it to you on Telegram. So if you
You
get,
sent the video to me on Telegram. Oh,
yes.
okay.
So if you can post it. But I'll just describe it. Marcus and I were like up late last night, like, oh, let's make a really cool demo, and then yeah, get it, but then can't share it. But basically, what it does is it's a Telegram bot that you can send a command to it, and it'll generate a proof of it like searching the text of the channel for some value, and then it returns that to you, so you can prove to other people what you've said and when. So the cool thing there is you have it's really easy to write the proof. Like, it feels so good to just like ingest like some chat history and like do a search over it and be able to share that and say like, oh yeah, it's valid. And then the other neat thing is like people have been, for forever, people have been like hashing text and then saying like, oh, look, I can prove that I said that because I posted that hash. But I like the idea of taking that to like the full group chat level, of having the full history of the chat be like hashed, and then what you're actually doing is just searching over it in a proof. So yeah, I've got a
Well,
little,
like, yeah, that's like even a more general topic that I think's had us like the most excited about. I guess like you just the DevEx plus like simplicity and ergonomics in like SP1 is that there's all these patterns that are like probably 10 years old plus in crypto where it's like, I guess I call it like Turing complete, like, but not ergo complete. Like you can do it for sure. But it's not, but it has tons of moving parts or isn't very like ergonomic to write, which means like in practice, the barrier is like, multiples of, or like orders of magnitude higher to writing it. So like the classic example is like, even I guess like Goldfinger.Kino, who's on here, was like playing with, state channels in the past. And like, it's an obvious pattern. You could like, have a game of chess and it's pretty easy to like have a protocol that like each person signs off on each person's moves and like advances. But there is this like qualitative difference when you can just write that as like, one sequencer validating that like someone's, that someone's move is right. Or this pattern in like chat. Like, yeah, you can like Merkleize the entire chat and prove that something's in there. But being able to just like, as Doria said, just like write it, prove it, like done. It's like a really big unlock, and I think people like consistently underestimate like ergonomics and integration in programming because like it's not just that you like lose out on the one thing that doesn't get built, but you miss out then on all like the compounding after that. So, getting off my soapbox, I think that's like what's been most exciting to us about playing with SP1 recently. Let me interject real quick. It's uploaded, so if you guys want to take a look, it's the reply to this space is right below that. So
Thank you. Thank you.
it'll make great radio to have everybody in the space watching, like taking 2 minutes to watch. It's
Oh, I
like,
see. Like right
it,
here, yeah.
anyway, if while
Oh,
you
yeah, I
guys are
see
watching
it.
it,
Because
yeah.
we also have to like listen to like Doria's untransitioned voice in the background. Like while we're talking.
Wait, so how does it, how do you, so how does like the, how is like the Telegram chat like attested to, I guess?
Yeah, so in this example, it's like taking checkpoints. So it's just like that you have a bot running on your node. It's looking at the history, it's compiling it into like a data structure that you then do in fact hash and then post somewhere.
Ooh, wait, so your like key node is ingesting the data basically?
Yeah, so
So this is like, go.
that's the part that makes this hopefully interesting, is like I mean, maybe we should give you an introduction to what we're working on. I don't know, like this is the first time we've talked about it. But yeah, basically the infrastructure that we're building is peer-to-peer like storage, compute, and PKI. And what that does is like, if you have something that you want to do, like a web service, right? Maybe you're running a Telegram bot, or you're hooking into like Twitter, or whatever else you want, or it's happening all inside the network where you're just like sending messages to one another, to your identities, which could be like, you know, a .eth name, right? Then you have the ability to like do some stuff with that data, share it with other people, actually do compute, actually store it. So in this example, right, I've got a Telegram bot running as a process on my node, which is just running on my laptop. I do some stuff on Telegram, right? It's ingesting that information. It can then take that data programmatically, like take checkpoints of it every, you know, X amount of time. It, from my node, I can post that to Ethereum, right? Or a rollup. And then all of that's happening in the same programming environment. So yeah, when Bazil talks about integration, that's really our bread and butter.
So when you say checkpoint, is it just like the hash basically? And then what you're using SP1 for is to like open the hash?
Yeah, pretty much. It's the actual circuit literally just takes in like the chat log, asserts that it matches a specific hash, and then does a string search on it.
Oh yeah, that's really cool. I mean, yeah, that's definitely like a really interesting use case that I didn't imagine.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's, you know, there's an element, it's like ever so slightly contrived, right? Because like, you know, you can do this in other ways in theory, but I think at least while I'm writing it, I'm getting really excited about like, okay, what else can you do in this environment now? Because I think like the way people use like existing apps and stuff could be augmented, which I find to be a lot, you know, easier than getting everybody to use a new chat client, right? You just augment their existing one with really interesting tools, and you turn like a trusted service like Telegram into like a trustless one by doing your own logging, producing your own proofs. It's permissionless.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's also like just really easy for users to get onboarded because they're already used to Telegram and stuff. So,
Yeah, we really like being able, we sort of using existing interfaces and then hooking them up to a back end really easily. So a lot of our work is to like make that clean. And so even I think like the two parts of like being able to ingest Telegram pretty cleanly, because we've done work on Telegram, Discord APIs, like stuff like that. And then also being able to just like, you know, write programs that prove the chat in like the way that's not even different from your normal backend program. It has some like compounding benefits. Like this is really fast for Doria to write.
Yeah. And SP1 is super nice. You guys doing a great job. It's it like the difference between like it, you know, not to, you know, throw shade on anybody, but the difference between it and like other prover systems is like, this took me, like, it just was an instant onboarding. And that's kind of what really matters in this case, where you're just trying to get people to like write new kinds of software, you know, because there's already this massive, you know, difficulty curve of like coming up with something novel and doing something interesting. So yeah, the tools have to be really good.
Yeah, for us, we're really excited to like see you guys play, like, see people like you guys like play around with it, because like I think before we found that like with a lot of the tools released in the past, only like people who already knew ZK or like people who are like really willing to like spend a lot of time learning the tools could use it. And yeah, I think the biggest thing we're excited about with SP1 is like the fact that like anyone can use it, and that like basically if you could just are willing to learn Rust, you can use it. So totally agreed there.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. None of us had written circuits before, right? Like we weren't doing that. But we were hoping that something like this would come along, because it has a lot of really nice properties.
We were like explicitly like almost putting a pause on looking at ZK stuff or doing specialized ZK work and just doing all the integration work and node work, like kind of hoping, anticipating that this would happen at some point, because it seemed like the trajectory was going that way like a year ago. Can we ask like what you guys like have coming up next? Because obviously this was like a pretty big unlock, and I'm curious like kind of what you see as like the stuff that you're most interested in like sort of going further with then.
Yeah, so I think for us, we're focused on, there's like multiple directions we're really focused on. So the first direction we're really focused on is getting the cost down like another order of magnitude. And basically the reason is because because like the inner like it, because their VM is like general purpose, like you can just write Rust, it actually like historically has had like a lot of performance overhead compared to like writing circuits or using more specialized proof systems. And like a lot of the design work we did with SP1 was actually to like make sure we can like really bridge that gap. So inside SP1 we have this like modular precompile system. So like in the EVM, for example, you don't actually have to call like SHA, you don't have to implement SHA-256. Like the EVM already comes with like a SHA-256 precompile that's like super accelerated and super efficient. And like in SP1, we have a very similar concept where like you can basically precompile out operations. So like wherever you use SHA or Ketchak or do elliptic curve stuff like verifying signatures, we can basically, instead of using like the normal code written in Rust, we can just use like the accelerated version that like we've hand optimized. And that actually has already gotten us like huge orders of magnitudes of improvements on like bridging that gap. The second thing we're doing is like trying to get our prover to just be like generally more memory efficient. And this is like really important because then we can use like really cheap instances to host the prover. So like, for example, a few days ago, I actually lowered the memory usage of a prover by 3x and actually ended up lowering the end-to-end cost of like generating proofs on like the cheapest instances by like 7x. So nice. Yeah, the cost of like the VM is just like going down rapidly. And like, I really do feel like it sort of is like this like ChatGPT like 3 moment where it's like kind of a glimpse into the future where it's like you just write Rust, you get a proof, and it's going to be like extremely cheap.
Yeah, that's extremely exciting. The precompile work makes perfect sense. We're familiar with how that goes in these environments, and
actually sense. I think like one thing that's like underrated about SP1 compared to like other ZK VMs is like really how easy we made it for other people to add precompiles. Like our code is like fully open source and like super easy to like modify. So like, for example, if you guys have like a specific signature scheme you want to support, like you guys can just make a PR to add the precompile, and then like you guys and everyone else will have access to like being able to use it in your programs.
Wow. Yeah. That's huge. That's huge.
What's like, because we've been having some internal debates about this and like planning, what do you see as like sort of the theoretical limit for how fast proving can be relative to the initial computation? So like if you have a computation that takes like 1,000 units of processing time, like what's the sort of limit that you can like prove that in terms of, you know, time, resource cost?
Yeah, I think there's actually like a few people in the ZK space who have like kind of like studied this more academically. Like I think there's this guy called Wei Dai from Bain Capital, and I think there even might be a few research papers on this. But yeah, I think it's generally seen that like in the best case it's always going to be at least like 100 to 1,000x overhead. But I guess like that's okay in a world where like you have at least 100 nodes which would replay the computation. So it's all about that, like, basically that trade-off.
Curve. Sure, the leverage. No, that's, like, even, I mean, 100,000 is, like, quite fast relative to it. But it's, yeah, it's just, like, it's useful to bound it for a lot of things. And how far off are you guys from that now? Like, I know it's way more than that now.
I think we're pretty far off. Like, I think we might be, like, 100,000x or even, like, 1,000,000x, to be honest.
Which is like totally useful for a lot of cases.
Yeah.
It's interesting to talk about like the leverage where you're saying like, well, if 100 other people are going to have to perform this computation, then a 100x slowdown on a single node is basically free in the business case.
Yeah.
So that's very interesting to me because we've been talking about, you know, what kind of work is going to happen both on chain, but then also in like maybe a ZK pro coprocessor or something like that. And then I guess the debate is like, is there still room for the personal computer, right? And you have like this, you know, very, very powerful, world computer type setup where lots of services are running on app chains or rollups that are using ZK aggressively and performantly. It's like, is there still room for the personal computer in that actually?
What does personal computer even mean there though? Like at the end of the day, personal computer is just like the thing you can get to like both show your identity, encrypt like your data. Like, I don't know that it is it like having like a replicated set of all your data across tons of nodes that different than having it on like a physical device? It seems like that's a, I don't know, it seems like it like really overprivileges the physical to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
I think there's actually some like pretty interesting work that like I think I heard that it was from like Justin Drake and the EF that are work, or that like these, like there's this idea basically where like for every core you have in your phone, you would have like 100 ZK cores. And basically you could like real time generate ZK proofs of your like phone's like state and execution basically. So that's like one interesting thing that I've heard.
That would be the very end game of all computation, I guess. But no, I mean, it's, I guess going back to the, like, what is the personal computer? Maybe that's just a place where you're doing some compute that you like, don't want to have to prove and verify if there's even room for that. I don't know.
Yeah. One thing I'm interested about from Succinct, because I know you guys are like, want to see like what we can do with it, and we have a number of ideas sort of push things. Are there things you've been like hoping that people would make or like wanting to see out there, or you're surprised people aren't doing or anything like that? Because it's, you know, sometimes we have blind spots as well, and it's interesting if there's stuff that, you know, you sort of just want to see exist out there.
Yeah, I think for us, we haven't, I think we're pretty interested, or I think for the long tail use cases, we want to see more like AI stuff. Like, I think like one really amazing benefit of SP1 is you can just like import like all the existing like linear regression libraries or like decision forest libraries or like even like neural network libraries in Rust and just like start doing interesting stuff with them. So kind of like verifiable data analytics or verifiable like intelligence, basically. I think it's the same. We're mainly focused on like bridges and roll-ups, to be honest, because those are like the things that crypto needs like today, but I think it's still really exciting to see like all the experimental use cases.
Yeah, I guess like I think the other thing, I mean, Drew, like Goldfinger, if you have like anything, you know, you've been thinking of particularly here, I guess the only thing that comes to mind that would like be a big hold up on the AI ones that you're mentioning is just like the proof overhead. Like, how are you imagining that working if you have like a, you know, 5-6 order of magnitude, you know, relative slowdown on something like data analytics? Like, you can just pretty quickly blow past the bounds of like feasibility or utility.
Yeah, I think this is why like the pre-compile thing is like really important, because like you can basically like accelerate the really heavy parts of the computation. But I think like the most interesting stuff that I'm talking about are actually quite simple. Like, I think, for example, like even like a very simple linear regression model is like something that like really hasn't been explored as like a useful primitive on chain. And like linear regression is like really cheap, but it's just like really annoying to code in Solidity, or like even like simple like decision forests to like control like DeFi protocol parameters, I think, are like quite interesting.
I see. Okay. So just simple like linear regressions that you can then like verify and just like make like contractual.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, like I think there's actually some protocols who are trying to use like linear regression to control like liquidation thresholds and stuff. So I'm like curious if there's like more, you know, complicated or programmable models.
This hits something we've been like thinking about a lot, which is like just like keeping like ETH or running stuff on, you know, rollup, but maybe even on base ETH and so like in some cases. And then just like not even doing like an alt VM for rollups, just like totally turning the idea of like rollups or like the verified computation just into like simple bespoke Rust programs and making like the infrastructure for that. Like for example, in like Doria's example there on Telegram, like not that hard to turn that into some kind of, you know, protocolized thing with some conditions that it unlocks, as long as like, you know, you commit to like one part of it. I need to see what, like, you know, maybe who's running, as long as you're fine with the assumption of like who's running the Telegram bot or something like that. So I think like that's interesting. Like, just getting, I guess you're just kind of trying to open up the market of like verified and like smart contract enforced computation a lot at that point.
Yeah, I think like another big aspect is like, you know, like to be honest, like the Solidity has like a great developer ecosystem and there's like a lot of libraries, but like Rust's ecosystem of libraries is like just a different level. And like the fact that you can like kind of seamlessly connect the two is like something we're really excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you're connecting like the ETH, like all of its like consensus properties, like essentially the fact that like you're fine leaving millions of dollars on ETH when you sleep at night. Like you're connecting that very cleanly with like Rust libraries, which is that's a really big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Crap.
That left like Oh, actually, I was going to ask, like, I think I asked GA Const this when it came out, like, maybe it doesn't even matter that much, because like, I think we thought of some ways around it, but is there going to be, like, any, like, Solidity, like, EVM verifier for proofs at any point, or is that, like, far off?
Yeah, so we're, like, really actively working on it. Actually, I think we have a PR in our repo right now that, like, finally gets, like, the recursion down to, like, a pretty reasonable cost. But yeah, I think it should be coming in the next few weeks. We just have to like basically grind on it, but that's like top priority for us.
What's like the cost of it going to be?
So right now the verifier costs around like 40 million cycles or sorry, like basically the way you should think about it is like we generate our proofs in this like proof system that's really optimized for proving, but it's not compatible with Ethereum for verification because Ethereum like assumes that you use like these like specific elliptic curves. So basically we have to like kind of like wrap the proof where we like convert it from our proof system to like an Ethereum compatible proof system. And we've actually done this in the past for other proof systems like Plonky 2, which is like pretty similar to what we use. And we found that the recursion cost was only like a minute to basically wrap the proof. However, with SP1, there's this additional step where you have to basically aggregate all like these like basically we like shard for really long computations, we shard your computation into shards.
Yep.
And we have to basically like aggregate all the shards into one shard proof basically. So our basically aggregator for that, that's like what we're really actively working on. And it just takes like a few minutes to aggregate two shards into one. But we think we can get down the cost significantly still. And also, there's an added benefit where you can parallelize this across like a distributed cluster of machines. So that in practice, the latency should only be like a few minutes, I hope.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, that's very exciting. That's like the one, maybe one tiny part of the prover system that I've actually looked at in like the code. Because we have that PR to do it in WASM. So that's actually a good thing to bring up, the whole WASM angle to this, because like not only are we talking about a Rust ecosystem that's got a lot of really good stuff, but it's also most of it compiles to WASM in one way or another. And now you're talking about like you've got all that benefit plus the sort of containerizability of running it in WASM. And for us, of course, that's like that's the whole thing, because we want people to be able to like run this stuff at home. Or not even literally physically at home, but on a machine that they control. And WASM's really powerful for that. So so that demo that I made was using like, we have basically just a one line change in the whole SP1 repo just to like in the sharding case not write to disk. Cause in WASM you don't have that. So it's like, that was the only line of code that needed to change to run the entire prover system in a WASM environment.
Oh yeah, we actually made a modification to a prover like a few days ago where we just like don't even write to disk anymore.
Oh nice.
We found it to be more efficient. So
well, there we go. That's great.
But yeah, you were running into like memory issues, right? I don't know if you're still running.
Well, so the memory issues aren't even like they're not even connected to like the using of system calls, right? Like that part was sort of it's like orthogonal.
Oh, I see.
But of course, yes, there is also the situation where you run into memory issues because like you're running like a WASM program and you're limited to like, you know, a certain amount of memory. And so if you're doing a really big proof, like I mean, it's the same problem as when you run out of memory on a machine, right? On a piece of hardware or, you know, whatever. So I don't even view that as like, you know, a big problem. I think that's just a good impetus to say, oh, well, design your proofs to be small, you know, verify what you can efficiently, or do the thing that you mentioned earlier about distributing it across multiple processes or multiple nodes.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, and this is also where like a provider model comes into play, which is something that we've been sort of working on a lot for some of the use cases for our system, which is that, you know, I might run a node that I use for my, you know, personal stuff that doesn't have a ton of memory or a ton of processing power. I'm running it on whatever, a DigitalOcean droplet, or I'm paying somebody who runs a bunch of these nodes to run it in their data center. They're giving me a tiny little slice. I don't want to be generating proofs necessarily on that. Although with advancements in the tech, I'm excited for the possibility of being able to do that. But in the meanwhile, you can just call out to a provider that's going to generate the proof for you. And that would be, I think, a very like vibrant economy, depending on what people are doing.
Yeah, we've been thinking a lot about that as well. Like, I think our long-term goal actually is not SP1. It's actually to build this thing called a decentralized proving network. And like, basically, we want to make it so like you can run any ZKVM like SP1 or other ZKVMs. And you can just like basically send a request, like similar to how you send like a transaction on Ethereum, and just get like a proof back for anything. And there's actually a lot of like benefits of this. Like you said, like if you're on a very cheap machine, you can like request really expensive proofs. But also it's just like generally more efficient because it's like kind of like a free market where like everyone's competing to generate proofs. And like there's a lot of operational overhead to like running these provers in like the most efficient way. So you can basically delegate that to like these like really specialized providers, kind of similar to like Bitcoin miners. I think there's going to be like proof mining basically. And then basically you can get like really resilient, cheap proofs generation.
Yeah,
I think we could like help you out there on like just building the backend for that. Cause like we're specifically trying to make essentially like a networked backend for these like arbitrary topologies that people will verbalize. Like you just like verbalize like, you know, a really useful, like easy to verbalize topology that actually has a lot of like annoying like schleps in it. Like basically it kind of assumes that you'll have like cryptographic identities, easy way to like, you know, gate things, pay for things, be able to like integrate the computations provided back into like the network. And it's not like none of these are like crazy like theoretical problems, but our like main focus is doing that schlep so that like, you know, when Doria shows that demo today, it was like very easy for him to write, but there's like a lot of moving parts that are wired up there. But we're pretty excited about like, yeah, just making that stuff like a lot more doable.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the prover network is like a bit of a longer term thing, but I'm really happy to like chat more and see if it's a good fit.
I think like at the point when provers exist, which they sort of all, you know, do already, it's actually like not a very big step from there to make it. Honestly, like we might even just like take it and run with it and like at some point like just build a simple like prover network proof of concept, because it's like pretty easy to do and can like, you know, sort of add arbitrary features as needed.
This is where it gets interesting. Like
I think people's imaginations are kind of constrained like on what the timelines for that should be, because like people haven't really done the schlep to make like a slightly better overlay network, and once you have that, a lot of the stuff is like kind of easier.
Yeah, that's where this gets interesting, is we've already set up provider networks for different kinds of compute. For like we've got one for like LLM completions, right? So if somebody's running Llama CPP on their machine and you want to get some completions from them, like that's a very similar kind of network that's happening peer to peer. So I don't think this would be unreasonable at all to wire up like very quickly. And then of course I guess the resource intensive thing is not actually writing the code, but producing the economies of it, where you onboard people to this, get them proving, and then figure out an economic, you know, incentive for them to do so. Yeah,
that would be really cool. I would be really curious to see like what that would look like.
The coding part of it, once you have these like nodes, is not crazy at all. It's like very fast because what you're talking about basically is the ability to just like spin up one of these things on a machine and install some software on it over the internal network, And then you're hooked into basically a request response protocol that's designed by your app that anybody else can hit if they have the proper capabilities to do so. And so the entire design process is just saying, oh, okay, well, I'm going to write a prover app, which the prover is going to run. I'm going to run a client app. I'm going to give them an API so they can talk to each other. And then I'm going to decide on like the security and economic rules of the game, which would involve probably some sort of crypto payment. And then you're good to go. People can just start using it. So we've done this all the way for, everything, but actually like making a product for it for AI completions. And then I think provers would be a really good second one to do, and maybe one to take all the way.
I have a question. I saw the example in the repo that we could prove Wreath now with SP1, and just playing around with the technology, it seems like we're basically, it's like basically ready to productionize. Like we don't have a verifier, like an EVM verifier, but you can kind of just go ahead anyway with like a set of validators and then just like swap it out for actual validation like later on. It's like, is there anything that you think is missing or that we're waiting on to start just like productionizing and building like real roll-ups with SP1?
Yeah, I mean, obviously like the proof system is like not audited yet, and I there are like some remaining to-dos, but I do think it's like really close.
And I think like, you know, right now there's like all these like ZK EVM companies who spent like years like writing these like handwritten like circuits for like ZK EVMs and like these like archaic proof systems and these archaic DSLs. And like the fact that like we were kind of able to use this like universal front end called Rust and just like get Wreath working in a weekend. And then like the performance is like not even that much worse off. In fact, I think even like perhaps like now it's much closer than what we reported in our blog post. I do think it's like really exciting. And I think it shows kind of a glimpse into the future, which is just like all the rollups will write their EVMs in Rust, and then they'll just use the best ZKVM available at the time to compile it. And then they'll just like run their rollup like that. And I think it's way more maintainable. It's way easier to modify. And like, it's just like makes like kind of like, there's like whole companies who like have this spent like their entire like life building a ZKVM. And now it's like become so easy. Like it just really feels like everyone's going to be able to have a ZK rollup if they want one very soon.
Right. Yeah. And I think like so I guess a lot of people are thinking that basically the future is like EVM and Solidity based. And so you have like some of these projects like MUD, where they basically built like a relational database and like a key value store that works with the EVM like storage format. But it seems like with SP1 that we could basically like just use anything. Like why wouldn't we be able to just use like SQL, right, as our backend? And then you can just like have arbitrary wallets or whatever sort of like interact with that. And like have that be your chain instead of an EVM.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think like there's this like interesting like perhaps like turning point where like I know there's been people who have been trying to build like other execution languages like, you know, SVM or Move, and maybe like the bigger trend we're going to start to see is like more experimentation where like you can just use like normal Rust or like JavaScript or something as your execution layer, because like that really is like mass adoption if you can do that.
Yeah, it's huge.
I mean, it's not like at the end of the day, like to make these things work, like if you can write stuff where you can reason about it in terms of just being like, you know, simple functions, a lot of the, you know, it doesn't get rid of all auditing complexity and something with a lot of moving parts like a smart contract, but you can definitely isolate a lot of parts and like make them simpler to reason about, like in these ways. That brings me to one thing when you're talking about these other companies. Are you guys comfortable talking about like what your business model is or sort of how people should be thinking about you? I'm just genuinely curious.
Oh, yeah. I think we haven't done a really good job communicating about this, but we actually have this proving we have this website called alpha.testing.xyz, and it's basically like a fully managed end-to-end platform for proof generation. Mm-hmm. And this was actually built before SP1. It was really meant for like people who are writing like coprocessors using like circuit languages like Circom, Gnark, and Pongi 2. And we've actually are using this platform for a lot of our customers like Celestia, Avail, Lido, Gnosis, and a bunch of others. Mm-hmm. I think in the long term, our business model is like the proving network, but in the short term, we're like, really excited about just having like a hosted version of SP1, where like you'll just be able to like kind of do like cargo proof -- remote or something with like RPC, and you can just get mm-hmm. a proof back like really fast, low latency, very cheap, because we'll like basically just like optimize the living shit out of it. Mm-hmm. That's like a lot what we're thinking about, but I think like we're just like so early still that we're not really thinking about like revenue or anything. We just really want to see like this technology be adopted as like fast as possible.
Yeah, totally. Interesting. Okay. Would you be thinking that when you say like long term, the future is like the proving network, without making any commitments, anything is like some kind of like decentralized governance or like token type thing or one of those types of like models where it becomes like a protocol for people to plug into?
Yeah, I think we're not like sure what it, like the topology of like this network will look like. Like, I think it could even make sense for it to just to be like 8 validators who are not even staked. They're just like kind of like a multi-sig running like a really small chain or something.
Yeah.
To coordinate this like proving market, or it could be like a Tendermint chain, or it could be like a Keynode P2P kind mm-hmm. of system. I think either way, what we're really excited about is having like a competitive marketplace for proofs, because like that just like sets all the incentives correctly for like the price of proof generation to basically go to zero. So that's like basically the main thing we want to accomplish. And I think kind of like mm-hmm. the technical goals are kind of or the technical decisions haven't been made yet, but they'll probably like reveal themselves very soon.
Yeah. Okay. And is all the stuff like open sourced?
For the cluster management, I don't think it makes sense for it to be open source, because what we imagine, or sorry, do you mean the proving network?
He dropped.
Oh no, he dropped.
But kind of answer the question, like the topology, the exact topology of the network is definitely the interesting open question when you're designing these things.
Oh, P's back now.
Maybe. Well,
what was the question? I dropped during the question. I'm sorry.
Oh, I think like you mentioned something about like open source.
Oh yeah, I was just asking like which parts are going to be open source, which aren't. You were saying that like for like the management like infrastructure for like proving networks, it didn't make sense to open source that. But I'm guessing
I think like in the end game, we don't want like we as Succinct don't even want to do proof generation. Like we'd rather like outsource it to like cloud companies or hardware companies. And I think from mm-hmm. their perspective, it might not make sense to open source because it's kind of like their edge. Mm-hmm. However, like the protocol, the proof system, like the default prover you can run locally, everything else will like definitely be open source and like truly in the spirit of like crypto, which is like fully open, like permissionless, you know, decentralized as much as possible.
Yeah. And what are the trust assumptions when you're like, sorry, it's early, I haven't had enough coffee. Like, what are the trust assumptions when you're like outsourcing a proof to a prover?
Well, basically the way you can think about it is like there's this like coordination layer that's like managing the request and the fulfills of the proof and like the payments. And so you're making like a liveness assumption on the coordination layer, basically, mm-hmm. where like the coordination layer has to be like processing transactions in order for you to get your proof back. But the proof itself is like truly like it's just the magic of ZK, which is it's like self-verifying. So there's no trust assumptions at all.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, great.
We're coming up on 45 minutes, so maybe it's good to ask if anybody else wants to ask any questions. If you do, just look, you know, raise your hand.
Yeah. People, looks like it's a busy day today. Markets are, in fact,
going crazy.
Yeah, people are out at the club. But I have one little question, which is about like private versus public inputs. Do you have any like timeline for that with the SP1 prover?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a really high priority list because in practice you can't really use SP1 in production right now. Sure. So it feels like it's pretty easy to just like assume everything's private or assume everything's public, and then it's like something we can add later.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
However, like if it's really blocking you, we're really happy to like do it. Or like alternatively, like the SP1 repo is like fully open source and like anyone can contribute. Yeah. So if that's like a feature you want to add, like I'm super happy to like mentor you or point you in the right direction for how to add it. I think like in principle, it should not be that hard.
No, it's not a blocker on anything at all. I was just curious, but that sounds fantastic. Yeah. That's pretty much everything for me. I don't know.
Time to make some stuff now, but it's really, yeah, it's really good context for what type of stuff to make and how to orient everything.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. And it was super great to get to know you guys and more about your project. I'm really looking forward to hearing more from you guys.
Thanks.
We'll do a lot more. I think we should have some people also like in the city this spring. So should be able to, you know, do some stuff like virtually and then like drop by at some points and show stuff. It's like what you're doing is like a pretty big like unlock for the stuff we've been building towards. So it's really cool.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Okay. Just to remind everyone who's listening, after this or posted below this space, the recording of the space, you'll find the our Discord links and our Twitter links. So thank you, John from Sysync Labs for showing up and telling us about what's going on with SP1 or anything else today. Really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you guys later.
All right. Let's go enjoy the market now, I suppose.
All right. Yeah. Later, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.